Going once, going twice, going three, to sold to the man in the Blue Rangers hat, John Ellenthal. You're the winner.
Sounds like you, Kurt Schneider, are the auctioneer.
I would like to be that, except I can't speak that quickly. I'm going down, I'm going to take it.
Well, I think you just did a pretty good job. I guess the drawback would be no one knows what you were talking about, but you did speak fast. Remember that commercial, FedEx commercial from way back when, Pete from Pittsburgh or something? They had some guy speaking like that. Sort of an iconic commercial.
I think the fastest auctioneers are the livestock auctioneers from like the Midwest, the West and Midwest.
Is that where you bought your flock of cattle? What are cattle called? Not flocks.
Herd.
Herd, of course. Is that where you bought your gaggle of cows?
No, it's where I got my double coyotes.
I don't know what that means.
Me neither. Let's talk about today's episode. I started with that auction. One, give me a bid. One, two, three, sold. Because we're talking about auction items today, John.
We're going to auction off a guest spot on Smart Drivel, Kurt?
Yes, we're going to auction off the entire library of Smart Drivel.
There you go. And we'll give all the money to charity.
The entire IP we're going to auction off. You know what's interesting, John? Speaking of that, do you know that? And I'm sure you do. The entire Roman Empire went on auction?
I did. I actually saw something like that, but I didn't actually stop and look further. How does one auction off an entire empire?
First of all, it's sold. It sold for 6,250 drachmas.
Seems pretty cheap. What is that in U.S. dollars?
I knew you were going to say that. I don't know. I just like saying drachma. It was in 193 A.D. Now, what's really interesting is in 193 A.D., they were just ascending, and they were like at their height then for the next couple hundred years. So it's not like this was at the end or at the very beginning. So
what does one acquire, though? What have you bought when you bought the Roman Empire?
Well, their secret police put the empire up for sale. Now, what's interesting is the highest bidder ended up getting beheaded. So I guess it never ended up happening.
Wow. So I guess he didn't really win after all.
But they put the entire thing up for the entire, I guess, with all, and by the way, the land itself, worth a pretty penny because they owned most of the world.
Worth a pretty drachma.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Drachma is a fun word. I did spend some time in Greece a long time ago, and I do enjoy the drachma.
And that's why, you know, those Romans, they loved and adored and worshiped the Greeks and wanted to be anything like them. And so that's why their currency was also called the drachma.
You know what we might call this episode? Shake my head, because when I was preparing for this discussion, looking at some of the crazy ass things that have been auctioned off through history, the fact that someone put these things up for auction and then the fact that someone actually bid and won and paid for and acquired these things says something about humanity that I'm not quite sure I'm ready to uncover.
Give me an example.
Well, that being said, all right, well, I'll give you one. I was going to actually pivot to something that was auctioned off that I thought was rather remarkable in a good way.
Why don't you save that when we need it? Yeah, we're going to need that.
I'll hold that back. I won't go into the whole list, but the number of times that someone has auctioned off and bought a hair lock from some famous person. I mean, Elvis Presley's hairdresser, barber person decided to save some of his hair, which was pretty smart, when she sold it in 2002 for like $115,000. Lincoln's hair has been sold over time for like $25,000. People have bought Justin Bieber's hair. What is it about wanting to own the hair of a famous person?
So funny you should say that, because I know a person. He used to listen to the podcast. I haven't seen him in a while. Hopefully he still does. He lived in the town that we used to live in, John. His name is John Reznikoff. And John, he was basically a treasure hunter. And he would buy these amazing things and put them together and sell them. And his number one thing was to get a picture or an autograph, writing of something, and a piece of hair. And I asked him why. because the hair contains the DNA. It's something true with the person. You're not going to take their skin, which is something gross, or a fingernail, but the hair is something that you can display, and it is them. It's their DNA that you own.
I guess it does sort of bring them into the room. It's just, it's weird. I mean, someone bought Scarlett Johansson's used tissue from The Tonight Show for like $5,000. Now, she was the one who put it up on auction to raise money for something, but she literally sneezed into a tissue, stuck it in a Ziploc bag, put it on up for auction, and raised a bunch of money. Anyway, I guess the hair does authenticate. I mean, it's hard to fake someone's hair. It's got DNA in it, like you said.
Right.
It just got a morbid weirdness to it, does it not?
If you bring it to life the way John Reznikoff used to, where you have a letter written by the person and a piece of their hair framed, I get that. It's like, this is the legit. And if you're a fan of George Washington, you want those things. And by the way, Elvis Presley, little known fact, he actually had like dirty blonde hair.
Well, thank you very much for that. And this hair clipping, I assume, is dirty blonde.
No. It's
jet black. It was his dyed hair?
Yes. He dyed his hair jet black because that was the look back then. No one wanted a sandy-haired guy from the South. They wanted some guy.
Memphis, Tennessee.
Yeah.
Via Tupelo, Mississippi. So I think my goal will be to...
Honey by Van Morrison.
I think my goal will be to buy a bunch of hair clippings from famous people and integrate them into one human wig. And I can wear that around and just have all of this historical goodness and significance on my head. Except I won't, because it's seriously creepy.
Or get some hair, take the DNA out, reconstruct the person from that DNA, and then you have Elvis again.
Were you a biology major?
By the way, on your crazy thing, I think that, you know, I don't know if you heard of this, but Justin Timberlake, I'm sure you know this one.
Yeah.
He was on a show, and it was a morning radio show in New York, and the DJ, after he left, auctioned off his half-eaten French toast that someone bought on eBay for over $1,000.
Yeah. I wonder where that half-eaten piece of French toast... First of all, above all, I hope it remains half-eaten. And how about someone... Speaking of that, someone bought Britney Spears chewed gum for $14,000. How does one display that? I guess you put it in a little Lucite box and tell your friends, hey, look at this disgusting thing I spent real money for.
But here's the thing, though. If you really like and admire and whatever that person, to get something that was part of them probably means something to you. I mean,
well, it clearly does. Look, I understand if something has historical significance, but there is a frivolity to some of these things that. Yes, clearly they want to feel a closer connection with that person's celebrity moment in history. I get it. Clearly, it's a thing. I am very glad that I was not born with the collector's gene. There is such a thing. I don't collect stuff like this, and I'm very glad that I don't. I don't even know where I would put it.
$16,300.
For what?
In 2015.
The gum.
Queen Victoria's knickers.
Yeah. Now, they were clean, yes?
Yes. But the interesting thing about her knickers,
yeah.
Here she was, one of the richest women in the world, right? Because she was overseeing Britain when the sun never set on the British Empire. She was arguably the richest woman in the world. She basically wore the same pair of knickers for like 50 years.
Same style or the same pair?
No, same pair. And her royal seamstress would let them out as she became... Now, older. she had a lot of children, too. So I don't know about maternity knickerwear, but also she became older. And then it also had a real design in it that allowed the royal seamstress to take them up more as she shrank as she got older.
Shrank, I guess, is the past
shrunk.
Tense. Shrunk.
Shrunk.
Shrank. Shrunk.
Shrunk. Shrunk. Shrunk.
So I think they were drawstring, because unfortunately, I know a little bit about this topic. God knows why. Did they not have elastic back then? When was elastic invented, you think?
Elastic was invented 1931.
Oh, yes, of course.
Byproduct of rubber, when they found rubber. And Henry Ford went down to Brazil and took over all the rubber plants and actually had all these cities made down in Brazil to get the rubber plants back up here. And during that time, Well, I know that's true. I'm not sure when Elastic was.
I was going to ask you, have any concern at all that anyone might believe you?
Well, he did have rubber farms in Brazil.
Okay, and this is one of those Elastic, based on a true story stories.
But Elastic does come from like rubber is my thought. So
I think rubber is a critical ingredient. Okay. Yeah. So I will keep things in the royal family since you went there.
Okay.
I'll give you a double header, or should I say a double decker in this case, because I'm going to London. I'm going to two different royal unions. So Queen Elizabeth and Prince Philip get married in 1947. I'm sure it was a lovely ceremony. 65 years later, someone auctioned off a slice of wedding cake from that wedding. So I guess that's an important piece of history. The Queen was one of the most, but it only went for like $925 in 2013. So here's a piece of cake, obviously not edible. Let's hope it remained a piece of cake. And then I guess since this was the thing, 2 years later, a piece of wedding cake from Charles and Diana's wedding. When did they get married? Like 1981 or something. So bunch of years later, let's do some math. 19 and 15 is 34. So 34 years later, someone paid like $1,375 for a slice of cake from Charles and Diana's wedding. So this is like a whole thing.
They paid for that first before they paid for the piece of cake from Philip and Elizabeth.
The first auction was for Elizabeth and Philip, yes.
You said it was 65 years after they got married.
Well, 65 years after Queen Elizabeth and Philip got married in 1947 is 2013.
Right. And you said that they auctioned off for Charles and Diana a lot earlier than that.
No, I didn't. I said Charles and Diana got married in 1981 and 34 years later in 2015, their cake was auctioned off.
That's, you said there'd be no math on this podcast.
I was just going to say, don't worry, there's not going to be a math test. And by the way, I don't know what year Elastic was invented, but I'll take any odds out there that it wasn't 1931.
Okay. We're going to find out later.
I'll take the field on that one.
So let's talk, because everyone knows this because it was in the news a couple of years ago, but the most expensive item ever on auction.
Had to be a painting, right?
Yep. Leonardo da Vinci, Salvator Mundi. And it was basically a painting of Christ. And it sold for over $450 million. Can you imagine the commission that Christie's got or so, or whoever did it?
$450 million.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what is it? You got like a 15% seller's premium?
It was sold to the Louvre Abu Dhabi, which I'm not sure is even opened yet, has it? I know that it's the outpost of the Louvre, but in Abu Dhabi. And it was authenticated as in 2008 as a lost masterpiece of Da Vinci. Now, you and I have read enough Nancy Drew to know anytime someone talks about a lost masterpiece.
Excuse me. I used to listen. I was more of a Hardy Boys kid.
You know, written by the same person?
Did not know that. Was that person born in 1931?
I think beforehand. Anyway, I loved the Hardy Boys and I love Nancy Drew. So anyway, lost masterpiece. Now, the question is, there's a lot of questions. Is it legitimate or not? Because this thing was not around and all of a sudden they found it. It's like that book I gave you once, John, The Billionaire's Vinegar, where wine went up for auction.
Right.
First Malcolm Forbes and then the Koch brothers bought a bottle of supposedly 1757 Bordeaux that was Thomas Jefferson's when he was the first ambassador to France from the fledgling country of America 20 years after that. Apparently it was found in a wall in Paris. It was not. It was vinegar. Anyway, this thing they say.
I hope they had a lovely salad.
Went exactly. It went for so much money because supply and demand. There's only 20 surviving Da Vinci paintings to this day. So supply and demand, that's where it goes. Which, and Vermeer, there's only 30 Vermeers. So I'm sure if they go to auction, it'll be crazy too.
So that's an interesting one. And I'm going to once again make my selection based on what you said, because that seems like the right way to have a conversation.
Yeah, that's what I'm going to do.
Let's stick with Leonardo da Vinci. Yeah. One of history's great polymaths, obviously a painter, a sculptor, an architect, an engineer. Keep going down the line.
Flamenco dancer.
What's that?
Flamenco dancer.
and quite the karaoke singer, yes, from what I understand. Yes.
He invented the karaoke machine.
He was actually going to invent the karaoke machine or elastic, but he decided to wait to let that happen later.
And then he invented the slinky.
So let me tell you about him. So he had these notebooks. They were codex, his codex, where he would write down his ideas and thoughts and inventions.
Tell us what codex means, John.
It means notebook.
Oh, okay.
What do you think codex means?
I don't know. That's what I was asking you.
I think it's a fancy notebook.
Okay. It's not written in code or anything?
Well, actually, it's funny you say that. Well, I'm not sure funny is the right word, because he did, out of a sense of paranoia, he did write in code. So
it sounds very Dan Brown to me.
So a codex is like a book of statutes, a manuscript volume, a quire, Q-U-I-R-E, of manuscript pages held together with stitching, the earliest form of a book. Okay, so it was a notebook. It was a notebook from those times.
Well, it's not Hello Kitty.
He would draw, not to my knowledge, he would draw his inventions, you know, for the helicopter and all sorts of crazy stuff in there. So his codex, but you asked about code. He was kind of a paranoid guy, and he always wrote in mirrored cursive language. So that he was able to write at regular pace. So you'd have to hold it up to a mirror. So if someone was like looking over his shoulder, you wouldn't be able to see what he was writing. He wrote
That way in regular pace, like the way you and I write this way?
Polymath. He was clearly a unique specimen. Anyway, his codex went up for sale. I think the Vatican may have auctioned it off to raise money for the restoration of the Sistine Chapel or something like that. Bill Gates bought it for over $30 million. Now that he's put it on tour so it can be enjoyed by many people at various museums. But one of history's greatest minds and achievers, and these were his private thoughts and inventions, his notes basically. And see, that is a giant significant thing. It doesn't quite compare to Britney Spears chewing gum, but hey, different strokes.
Now, did he have a lot of these codexes, and did Gates buy a lot of them, or was it just one book?
I think there was a whole bunch of notebooks. So I honestly don't know whether Bill Gates bought a specific codex or the entire. They also made copies of them. I've actually seen copies. I know you have as well. Basically reproductions of them. But Gates has the original. I don't know if it's a single one or a set of them.
I bring that up because in case the podcast that we're doing doesn't work, you and I could go and try to find another one of his codexes someplace, then we could sell it.
Or we could just learn how to write in mirrored cursive language, and I'm not suggesting any kind of forgery.
It's very
just
Dan
to be
Brown.
Clear.
Okay.
All right. Where do you think Dan Brown got some of these ideas from? Probably history.
Yeah, well, it was called the Da Vinci Code. Oh, there you go.
All right. So do you have another Da Vinci fact, or do you want to move on to some other incredible object that's been auctioned off?
I'm going to just talk to one because I didn't know the dollar amount, but we all knew this because it was in all the news last year and it came across all of our sort of Google alerts or whatever you call it. I'm talking about the Art Basel exhibition last year.
Clearly a sign of the Armageddon, this one.
The banana duct taped to the wall sold for $120,000.
I've seen the picture. You've seen the picture. Many of our listeners have seen the picture. I have no earthly idea. I have no explanation. Do you?
Well, I do. And in the sweet irony that is art, because art in and of itself, I think today and all along, but today is the definition of irony. The guy wanted to question what art is by doing this exhibit. And in so doing, he sold a piece of art, right? So it's not a catch-22, it's irony. And someone bought it. Now, I don't know if they bought the duct tape and the banana, or did they cut the wall out or what?
I don't know, but I'm guessing the banana didn't do well long-term.
No, it's kind of like the Banksy people, right? You're going to talk about the one with the thing that shredded?
look, I'm all for, you know, art that is temporary, art that explodes, all that kind of stuff. I think that's part of it. But I've seen this. It is a banana duct tape to a wall.
Yeah.
And I'm sure that there are big questions going on here, but I'm not in tune with any of them. So
listen, I think to someone it was pretty appealing.
Clearly appealing. And the whole banana thing going on there, I think the buyer may have stepped on something and slipped and hit his or her head. Much like I would attribute to the person who decided to buy John Wayne. Maybe this has some. Would you buy John Wayne's toupee if you had $6,200 lying around? You would, wouldn't you?
No, I didn't realize John Wayne wore a toupee.
He did. In fact, it was made of human hair.
Well, and I think so, because that guy had a hell of an ego. Marion something was his original name.
Yeah, I don't remember the rest of it, but $6,250, I don't know the year, but someone bought his toupee. Now, this might interest you, Kurt. I could see you bidding for this, although I think after you won, you would probably go, what was I thinking?
Depends how many cocktails I had.
One of the greatest, most important figures of the 20th century, none other than Winston Churchill. His dentures were auctioned off. Like in 2010, someone paid over 15,000 pounds, British pounds, for his dentures. Now, when you consider the words that came out of that mouth and their impact on civilization, great. It still happens to be his dentures, though.
Actually, I think to me, it would depend on what decade those dentures were. If they were his late in life dentures from the 60s, you know, he did do the Iron Curtain speech then too. So that was done in Missouri or someplace.
If ever won that auction, would you ever consider putting those in your mouth? Would you ever put those in your mouth? You
Hell
would,
yeah.
Just to have a Winston Churchill moment.
I don't know what to say. I would have a martini. I'd have some brandy. I'd smoke a cigar. And then I'd never give up.
And then you probably wouldn't wake up to noon, and then you would take a bath. Now,
never give up.
Here's another body part, sort of. This is sort of a derivative, much like dentures. Someone paid $25,000 back in 2006 for William Shatner's kidney stone. Now, I've had kidney stones.
$1,000?
I've had kidney stones.
I thought you were
going
to say for his kidneys. It was like one of those urban legends.
I had kidney stones, and I have saved them. And I've never thought to sell them, but God forbid I have it again. If I have it again, I may put them up on eBay just to see what happens. All the money goes to charity, unless it's a lot. I'm just kidding. All the money would go to charity. But of course, I would never do something like that.
You know, funny you should say that. I don't remember the details of it, but a man in Australia put his entire life up for auction.
I saw this. Wasn't this recent?
And it was a guy in Perth, Australia. And I guess he wanted to start anew. He was in his late 30s, early 40s.
Yeah, he's like sold his house.
His house, all of his belongings, every single piece of furniture, clothing, car, everything. And he gave an intro to his boss.
Yeah, he sort of got a trial in his job, right in his job, too. Did he sell his name also?
I don't know, but it's
he basically
like selling,
sold everything he had.
It's like selling the Roman Empire.
Yes, except this seems more saleable than that. But I know it included a trial run at his job. Pretty funny.
What about Marilyn Monroe? Not the dress that she sang "Happy Birthday"
and the
Mr. President.
Is that the same dress from the 7 Year Itch?
No, that's what I'm saying. It's not that dress. That dress is the one that Kim Kardashian famously wore to the Met Gala last year and apparently like spilled some red wine on it. They weren't happy. God. No, this is the white dress that was worn in the 7 Year Itch, yeah. Billy Wilder, in New York. And actually, the idea was not to be in the scene to begin with. I just listened to a podcast, by the way, about Marilyn in New York. The scene was not supposed to be as it was, but she stepped on a subway grate. And the dress went up, and actually the iconic photo was taken not during a still of the movie, but afterwards, and all these people were around. But that dress, talk about an iconic movie moment.
No kidding.
It sold for $4.6 million, making it the most expensive piece of clothing ever auctioned off. And it was Debbie Reynolds originally owned it. Debbie Reynolds, right. She of Singing in the Rain, and she whose daughter is Carrie Fisher.
I think
they died within like 2 days of each other.
Yeah, that was crazy. Yeah, she actually bought all of Marilyn Monroe's wardrobe items from the studio back in the early 70s, and she got one heck of a return on her investment.
Now, I would think that that dress is cool, but you know, when I was in Berlin a couple of years ago, I was in the Deutschlander Museum, and they had Napoleon Bonaparte's hat that had fallen on the field of battle.
Wow, that's cool.
That the Germans picked up and saved, and it's in their museum. That I could see that, going.
So that's there. Cool. So that's a bona fide, no joke. That's a Bonaparte piece of history. I should have said a bona fide part of history.
Why is it dawning on me now that when people say, what are your bona fides? That's bona fide. What makes it? It's the same word, same idea.
Well, wow. I'm glad you had this moment, and I'm glad it's recorded for posterity. All right, listen, we got to wrap up soon. Give me a really good one to end on, something that's substantial, you know, not like someone sneezed and someone like captured someone buying the air.
Russell Crowe's jock strap from Cinderella Man. Okay.
Yeah, something not like that.
Okay. How about for $556, someone bought a 200-year-old condom made from sheep intestines?
Okay. Something not like that.
Oh, okay. Well, then I'll go with Giacometti's Pointing Man. You know, Giacometti.
Someone's feeling rather artsy today.
Well, because art tends to go for the most money. Giacometti is the guy who did in the 20th century those really tall, thin sculptures that, like, you know, it's almost like if you turn them on the side, you can't see them. And he did Pointing Man. He also did another one, which was like Standing Man, which was the third most. And it sold for $141 million in 2015. Interestingly, it only took him 9 hours to make back in the 30s or 40s. He had to get ready for an art show. He made this thing. It's like a standing full-size thing. Pointing Man, $141 million.
Can't say I understand the high-end art market all that well, but there are market forces, and there's a pretty good chance he'll sell it one day for a heck of a lot more.
Well, John, I mean, I was with you at that auction when you bid $14,000 for the dogs playing poker paintings. So you do have a sharp eye.
Yeah, well, that's not true. But it is true that you once bid $16,000 for some poop left on the sidewalk by one of Queen Elizabeth's corgis.
Did someone really do that?
No. All right, I'm going to close with two quick ones that are probably not that quick, but I think they're magnificent. And I could see actually wanting to own these items, even though I wouldn't buy them. So you're familiar with the famous and true story of the band playing on the deck of the Titanic as the Titanic was sinking after hitting the iceberg.
Talk about amazing people and musicians and giving of themselves.
Right. So this is an 8-piece band led by an English guy. I think his name was Wallace Hartley.
And the band played on.
The band played on. And they basically continued to play, even though they were facing imminent doom, to keep the passengers as calm as possible in the midst of this nightmare. Mm-hmm. So they fished out Wallace Hartley's body a couple days later from the frigid waters, and his violin case was still on his back. Inside was his violin, which was sold at auction in under 10 minutes. Back in 2013 for $1.7 million. Now, that is a transcendent piece of history, though, when you consider just the magnificence of that moment.
Okay.
You don't seem moved by that.
I do, but I don't think it was a magnificent, but
these people facing what an act of generosity under the most unimaginable conditions.
Agreed. That's a well said. Okay, give me your next one.
Well, is that not a magnificent display of what humans are capable of?
Yes, I think it is.
Okay. So the last one I really love, and I think this is the last thing I personally want to share on this topic. So Einstein, in the aftermath of winning the Nobel Prize, rather overwhelmed, and I think he's in Tokyo as some sort of book tour or something, and he's checking into a hotel, and he had been writing down some of his thoughts about life, and he's helped by a bellboy, but Einstein doesn't have any change in his pocket. So he hands the bellboy one of his notes that he had scribbled some thoughts down on. And it was Einstein's view of human happiness. And the note read, "A calm and modest life brings more happiness than the pursuit of success and the constant relentlessness." He hands that note to the bellboy as a tip. That note sold in 2017 for $1.56 million.
I think he said to the bellboy, "While I don't have any money, hold on to this. It might be worth a lot more than a tip someday."
Yeah, $1.56 million in Einstein's hands, his personal view of happiness, and really beautiful.
I think that is gorgeous. And, you know, Mae West was famous for saying something different. One of her favorite quotes was, "He who hesitates is a damn fool."
So that means we shouldn't hesitate to end this episode because we don't want to be called a fool. Thank you. Any final thoughts, Kurt?
Do you think, I'm just wondering in the future, what will be auctioned off of our, not you and me, but our generation, or our, what's going to be the ridiculous things that people laugh at or say, "Wow, that was really cool." The first pop culture
stuff. Look, the iPhone was transformational. We all held more power in our hands than was on, you know, the Apollo, you know, moon mission. So I think that is a moment in history that's worth, you know, owning a piece of if that's your bent. So yeah. Leaving the pop culture stuff aside, I'm sure there'll be some incredible things from 9/11 and things of that nature. But
so it keeps history alive. And, you know, I think that's wonderful that people do it. And what I love is what Bill Gates did, bought it and put it on tour. Right.
Well, not only does the band play on, but Kurt and I will be back next week where we have our next episode of Smart Drivel. Until then, we hope your week is filled with smart drivel. And please preserve locks of your hair and give them to someone who could use a lot of money in the future. Goodbye, everybody.
Hi, everyone. You sold me.